So this is our fourth session in this module, right? Transforming problems, how to transform our, as a wonderful text says, transforming adversity into joy and courage. There you go. So I wanted to make a plug. I was told to make a plug. Week from Saturday is Sakadawa, which is a very auspicious day in the Buddhist calendar. It's the day of the combined birth, enlightenment, and parinirvana, which is the when he passed from this earth, right? All three things rolled into one, right? Day. So that's a week from Saturday, and all good deeds, you know, on days like this are the positive results magnified. Rinpoche says millions and millions of times. There you go, right? So that's week from Saturday, right? And so there's going to be on that day, there's various pujas and so forth and so on that happen, right, in which you can participate. But the plug that I wanted to make was that Geshe-la will give precepts on that day. Now, you may not know what precepts are. So normally, when you are monastic, right, you take a whole bunch of vows, right, that you live in. It's, you know, like 360 odd vows. Now, we are, of course, not monastics, right? But however, we can, for a day, we can live somewhat like them, right? And we take what are called precepts. And you take maybe 7, 8 vows, I can't remember the number. You know, there are not very many of them that you won't do that day, right? One of the things, so taking precepts and living kind of in the vows for that day also magnifies, you know, our accumulation of merit, right? Remember the two great accumulations, accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom, right? Which is required to create the seeds for all of our positive endeavors, right? Or positive results, right? Just effort isn't good enough. We have to create the seeds for the efforts to come to fruition, right? So this is a way to accumulate that merit. Right? And so the precepts, if you have never taken precepts before, you have to take them from what's called a lineage master. Geshe-la is one of them, right? He holds the lineage. And the lineage can be traced all the way up to the Buddha, you know, 2,500 years ago. So he's qualified to give you precepts, and you can, if you register, you can take precepts from him, right? Once you have taken precepts, then you don't have to do it again with a qualified master because you can take your precepts by yourself, right? So if you've taken precepts from a qualified master already, then on that day you can just get up at sunrise and take the, you know, you can just do it yourself. But if you haven't, then you need to do it through someone like Geshe-la. So if you want to register, you should register if you want to take precepts because otherwise, you know, Geshe-la will come if people have registered, right? So if you want to take precepts, there's a way to register. You go to the calendar and you click on taking precepts. You know, there's something like calendar and the day. You go to the day, you know, week from Saturday, and then you click on it, right? Or you can send a mail to program.donna. Is that what it's called? Or Donna C. Joanna will tell me.
Program.donna.
Thank you. program.donna@kadampa-center.org. So, now what are the precepts, right? I'm sure you're all asking. If I'm taking precepts, what are they, right? One is to live like the monastics. We don't eat after this noon, you know, 12 o'clock, around 12 o'clock. So that means that on the day of precepts, you can have breakfast, you can have lunch, as long as it's before noon, But you'll have to skip dinner, and then you can take breakfast again after sunrise the next day, right? During the day, if you're skipping dinner, then you can have liquids like water, thin juice, nothing with pulp, because that's kind of like food, right? You can like load up on pulpy stuff, right? Things like that, right? So that's one vow is to live like the monk, and that comes from, you know, back in the Buddha's days, the monastics will go out to beg for food in the morning, right? And they would go to the villages, people would give them food, and they would all come back to their they didn't have monasteries, but usually in the forest where they were living together, or a park, and they would share all the food and they would eat, right? And they would ate one meal a day, basically, right? And that was before noon. So it's kind of like that for us. I mean, we're getting two meals, but still, it's, you know. So that's one precept. And the others are kind of like, you know, no stealing that day. No, hopefully you're not stealing anyway. So that's an easy one. No lying that day. This can be a little tough, but you can make it, I think, for a day. No sexual activity. What else? There are a couple of others like, no music, like dancing and singing. If you're singing, chanting, like, you know, prayers, that's okay. But if you're singing to Beyonce, then that's not. Kind of like that. You know, and the reason for that is, there's a reason, because those create distractions in our minds, right? I mean, you know, if you're singing to worldly songs, so to speak, they bring up worldly attachments, right? Which is, the whole idea is to remove attachments in our mind, right? So that's the reason for singing and dancing. And things like, and there's one called, Geshe-la will explain, don't sit on a high throne. Well, that's for monastics, you know, so that because when they sit on a high throne, they can have pride and so forth and so on, right? It doesn't quite apply to us, but it just means that have humility or don't have pride, you know. So things like that one has to watch out for, right? So it's not very hard to keep the precepts. I mean, you know, when we go on retreat, for example, when Rinpoche comes and we go on retreat in August this year, you know, you take precepts every day for 2 weeks. You know, it's not that hard. So anyway, I encourage you to do so because the rewards are great.
May I add one thing?
Sure.
If you go to the calendar on May 21st and click on 8 Mahayana Precepts, that will put you to a link to contact Patrick McGinnity. Even easier, he's sitting out in the lobby tonight.
With a dog.
With a dog.
Yeah,
he's the one with the dog. So if you talk to him and give him your contact information, he will make arrangements.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. Any questions about precepts or why and how or whither?
You mentioned no singing, dancing, or music. Is that listening to music or just like celebrating?
Yeah, it includes listening to music too.
Okay.
So if you really must have something in the background, I guess you could put on Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, you know? That won't count, you know. Anything else? Yeah, I mean, I really encourage you to do so. You know, it's really a wonderful thing. And, you know, and as I said, you know, all positive deeds on that day, and this is a great positive deed, to, you know, because if you do a deed, you know, positive deed, you, of course, create seeds for positive results in the future, right? But if you do it while in the vow, that creates it's magnified for obvious reasons, right? Because you're intentionally, you know, I mean, there's an extra intention behind it, right? So that's why living in the vows in general is a good thing, right? So I'll make another plug. If you decide, you know, if you're taking Discovering Buddhism and you really want to go the next step, I would encourage you to maybe take lay vows, right? Those, of course, you have to keep for the rest of your life. But again, they're not that hard, you know?
Refuge. You talked about taking refuge.
Oh, well, I haven't talked about taking refuge. That is true. You got to take refuge in the, you know, the, in the Buddha Dharma, you know, which is a process in which you basically say that you will follow the teachings of the Buddha, and you will give up all other worldly gods, any other refuge, right? So in other words, you are kind of following the path, right? The Buddhist path, right? So yeah, of course, thank you. You have to take refuge. And Discovering Buddhism, of course, has a whole module on refuge, what it means, what refuge means, what it means to take refuge, right? After you've done that, if you're interested, you can live in the vows for the rest of your life by taking the lay vows, which are also not that difficult, because there are 5 lay vows, right? No killing. That means ants and spiders too. No killing. But there's ways around it. I mean, I don't think I've intentionally killed an ant or a spider in 15 odd more maybe years, right? It's not that hard. Anyway, you just try to catch them and put them outside. So,
Before they attack you and kill you.
Or mice for that matter. I found a good way of catching mice and then putting them out. Anyway, that's another story. So no killing, no stealing, no lying, no, this is negotiable depending on who gives you the lay vows, right? No intoxicants, which includes alcohol, right? Some masters will say, well, you can take the four, all, you have to, some will say you have to take all 5, like mine, to say, you've got to take all 5. There's no way around. Actually, I just showed up and I wasn't given a choice, so, you know, you just have to take the 5. Some will tell you beforehand you can take the 4 or the 3, you know, depending, you know, so you get to choose. So no intoxicants, and then the last one is no sexual misconduct. Sexual conduct is okay, because we're not monastics, right? But no misconduct. So anyway, so those are the 5. And it's, again, not that hard, really, to live by them, because if you're taking this class, most likely you're not doing most of those things anyway. Anyway, okay, that's enough of that, I think. Digression. But it's an interesting digression, I think. So as usual, let's start with a meditation. And so today I like to pick different meditations for different days. So today I thought, you know, so last time we did the taking and giving, right, which we'll talk about more today. So today we'll do a meditation on just bodhicitta, great compassion, right? So let's just take a comfortable posture, and we'll do some breathing meditation just to calm the minds from the day. Because remember, if you remember the 7-point posture of, you know, where you discuss in other classes, then you can take that posture, you know, to go through the 7 points. Otherwise, just remember the most important thing is just keep the back relaxed, but straight, with the natural curvature. And then we can set our minds on the breath, the in flow and the out. So let's remember the reason to generate compassion or bodhicitta. That incredible mind, as it says in the Kadampa teachings, the eye is the root of all negative karma. It is to be instantly thrown very far away. Others are the originator of my enlightenment. They are to be immediately cherished. Think how self-cherishing is a cause of all your problems and the root of all your suffering. So we can think of situations in our life at present, maybe, or in the recent past. Then consider how the I that you are cherishing is not actually there. Because that is the truly existent I that doesn't actually exist. So if you can, sometimes it's easier to bring up the I and observe it, and you can bring up the I by, for example, thinking of a time when someone accused you of something, and that I arises where immediately, you know, you think of how unfair that is and how could he or she do this to me, etc., etc. So we can bring that up for a minute. And just notice the I that arises. And that's the I that we think truly exists, always has existed, always will exist, and exists now. And that's the falsehood. It's the root of all our suffering. Therefore, it is very foolish and harmful to cherish the I, since in reality there's nothing there to cherish. Make the decision that from now on you will cast away self-cherishing as though it were a deadly poison. Now think how cherishing others brings every happiness. Others are the originator of my enlightenment. That means not just my friends and those people or animals that I like, maybe some cat or dog, but every single one of the numberless sentient beings in each realm. So others are, some, for example, everybody around me here right now. Every insect, every bird, every worm that I see on the road when I go outside. Numberless animals, big and small. Rats, cockroaches, mosquitoes. Numberless human beings, no matter how they look or act. And all the beings in all the other realms. So every single one of those numberless beings is the originator of my enlightenment. Therefore, each one is to be immediately cherished, cared for, and served with my body, speech, and mind. Even if all the sentient beings get angry,
criticize or abuse me, don't like me, don't love me, always look down at me, and always complain about me, no matter how much I try to help them or how hard I work. So maybe we can think of a person like that in our lives right now, with whom we have great difficulty. Even he or she is to be cherished, because he is the originator of my enlightenment. Because he's no different from me. Whatever story I may have about them, that their way of thinking is bad or their manner harmful, still they are the originator of my enlightenment. No matter what they do, they are the originator of my enlightenment. It is not only enlightenment. Every single sentient being is the originator from whom I receive all my numberless past, present, and future happinesses. Every single temporary pleasure, the happiness of all future lives, liberation from samsara, and full enlightenment. What better gift is there than this? Then generate bodhicitta by thinking, therefore, in my life, there is nothing to do except cherish other beings, work to free them from all the sufferings and their causes, and bring them to enlightenment by myself alone. Therefore, I must achieve full enlightenment. From my side, to bring each and every single sentient being to enlightenment, even if I need to be born in the hell realms and suffer for eons, equaling the number of drops of the ocean or atoms of this earth, I can do that. But from the side of sentient beings, since they would have to suffer for a most unimaginable amount of time, I need to liberate them from the oceans of samsaric suffering and bring them to enlightenment as quickly as possible. Therefore, I need to achieve enlightenment as quickly as possible. So really try to generate that motivation that I myself will bring all beings out of suffering. For me, all my actions today, tomorrow, be devoted to that, or be directed through that motivation. Therefore, from now on, I am going to do all the virtuous activities, as well as eating, walking, sitting, sleeping, working, and so forth, to achieve enlightenment for sentient beings, to liberate them from the oceans of samsaric suffering and bring them to full enlightenment. So just sit for a while with that motivation. If it dissipates, that feeling, then you can just review the points, and you can just bring it up again and sit with it again. So that's, you know, that's a kind of a, gives you a flavor of how to generate the compassionate mind. And you know, as you know, the, you know, we talked about this, right? That it's all our happiness and all our problems is all due to the attitude that we have. Right, it's our mental attitude. It's all in the mind. Right, the Buddhas are not that different from us. Well, they are a lot different from us in a way, but they're not that different from us in that they basically were able to see how the mind, how it is like that. You know, right? That all our problems and all our suffering, all our happiness and all our suffering is in the from the comes from the mind. And once they were able to see that, then suffering has no effect, right? I mean, if you look at Rinpoche, for example, well, if those of you who haven't seen him or met him, you will get a chance in August when he comes. Anyways, when you see him, you'll see. You know, he had a stroke, like for example, he had a stroke 4 years ago, 3 years ago, so 4 years ago. And, you know, he was in the hospital, he was in pain. You know, they had him, you know, and he couldn't move the right side of his body. He couldn't even drink water because his lips, you know, would kind of drool out. But it was amazing. You can see photographs of him there were some videos at the time too of his students in the room or the doctors or the nurses. He was in hospital in Australia, I think. And he was just joyful. You know, he was in pain, but he was totally joyful. He was smiling. He was doing he couldn't even move his hands or whatever, so he would like hold up, you know, he was doing his prayer, so he would hold up one hand like this, right, with the other hand, or this way, right, with his, so, you know, and try to do his prayers even though he's mumbling. You can't really understand them because, you know, only a couple of people could understand what he was saying because he was just, you know, his words wouldn't come out. But he was totally joyful. Didn't affect, because it's all in the mind, right? His pain was no different than our pain, right? He was in pain, you know, but he doesn't worry about what's going to happen next, what'll happen because my body's falling away. All the stuff that comes through our mind, right? All the stuff in the future, the stuff in the past, stuff in the present. You know, it didn't bother him at all. So that's why I was saying the Buddhas are not that different from us. They're different in that they see the mind for what it is, right? So, and the way to get there is through compassion, like we've been discussing, right? To transform all our problems is to change the attitude with which we see our problems, right?
And how do we, you know, transform our how do we see our problems, or rather, how do we look at our problems as they come up, right? The constructive way to look at them is these eight verses that we've been talking about, right? And, well, I can find it. So I was just going to go through the eight, right? Or at least what we have covered so far, right? So if you remember, that says, determined to obtain, so this is the eight verses of thought training, right? Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them dear at all times. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. Vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. And so now we are here today. So the next verse it says, when out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. So, wait a minute, that's... Alright, we did that already, yeah. So the next one is, when someone whom I have benefited and in whom I have great hopes and gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my guru, right? When someone whom I have been benefited and in whom I have great hopes and gives me terrible harm, I shall regard that person as my guru. Wow. So, you know, the seeing the other person or the situation as a teachable moment, right? That's our conventional way of saying it, right? It's a teachable moment, right? It's a difficult thing, right? Especially to see the other person who's spouting their mouth at us as our teacher. Right, I mean, it's in the sense that that person, in a way, is through whom we get to practice. Right, that's what we're talking about. And as I saw this quote from His Holiness Dalai Lama. He said, well, it wasn't a quote; it was a paraphrase. But he said that having an enemy is not an obstacle to practicing the path. It is essential for practicing the path. Right, because if everybody were nice to us, then we really wouldn't need to practice the path, right? The only reason we practice the path is because we face obstacles, right? And so we have to kind of see it like that, right? And we have to see, you know, for example, you know, when we face a situation, there are many ways of looking at it, right? I mean, we can look at it as a victim, right? You know, people always do this to me, right? Or I don't deserve it. It's being, you know, so and so is, you know, all those things, as we know, right? I mean, each of us has been in that situation. But we can think, you know, for example, if you have an understanding of karma, you know, law of cause and effect, right? This situation is arising not by accident, right? We, in a sense, have created the causes for it. Just like we have created the causes, let's say, for our wealth or our good, you know, attractive figure, attractive body, right? Or our happiness in our relationship or whatever it is, right? It's an outcome of positive deeds in the past, right? So just like that, whatever is happening right now that is negative is also an outcome of our negative deeds in the past, right? As such, you know, we have to look at it like that. So it's kind of like takes this, it takes away the, you know, in a way you kind of take ownership of the situation, right? It's not like, you know, we can get out of this mentality of, you know, somebody's doing this to us. Actually, nobody is doing this to us. We have done it to ourselves. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, that's what the Buddhist path says, right? We've done it to ourselves. And now we kind of have to pay the piper, right? But we can transform it, right? By thinking positive thoughts, as Geshe-la says, right? He goes like this, right? Think something positive, right? And this is where that fits in, right? Is that we can look at it as a teaching moment, and we can say, okay, what is it about myself that I can change, right? How can I look at this differently, right? Through karma, thinking about karma. Through, for instance, if you have an understanding, or if you have some knowledge about how to look at the eye, right? What is it that, like we did today, like, you know, what is it that's arising that's so pissed off, right? Or angry, or impatient, or whatever it is, right? One can just notice it, right? You don't have to go further down the story, right? We tend to go into the story, right? About ourselves or about the other, right? But instead, we can just sit there and notice, right? There it is. And there are many ways to look at it, right? Without going the next, without just going to the next thing, right? Which gets us down further in the rabbit hole, right? Because, as you know, the more we go into the story, the more negative imprints we're creating in our minds, right? And the more negative imprints we create in our mind, the more negative things are going to happen. Right? We're going to engage in negative actions like anger, jealousy, you know, hatred, pride. I mean, all these things that arise, right? And that creates further suffering, right? So that's why we have to see the situation or the person as a teacher. This is an opportunity for me to practice, right? What I've learned so far, here's my chance of actually putting it into practice. And then, you know, it says when I, someone of whom I benefited and I have great hopes, right, in whom I have great hope. You know, because when we do certain things, let's say nice things, right, we expect niceness in return, right? We have this expectation the other person is not going to stab me in the back, right? By the way, I'll tell you later, but anyway, I got stabbed in the back recently, metaphorically speaking, but anyway. So we expect nice things to happen to us, right? Or the person will be nice to us. But that's not the, as you know, that's not always the case, maybe often the case. So, and that's where, you know, we put ourselves in that situation because we have all these expectations built in. Right? If I do this, if I do X, right, my partner will love me X, Y more. Right? Or, you know, I do this at work, I will get rewarded. Well, it doesn't happen, right? Let's say. Right? Or if I do X, you know, to my partner, negative Y happens. Right? I mean, like, it happens just the opposite of what we expect. Right? I mean, you know, we've been in that situation. So that's the thing where we build in all these stories, right? Because we have all this attachment built into ourselves. Why do we have these expectations? Because we are doing these nice things in a way because we want nice things to happen to us, right? Which is attachment, right? Attachment to ourself. I mean, it's not to say that we hope everybody always is mean to us. That's not what I'm talking about, right? But we have this kind of built-in, you know, attachment in all our actions. And that's where the expectations come, then that creates all this suffering, continual suffering, right? But if we don't have those expectations, we're just doing nice things because, well, it's virtuous to do nice things, right? That's all, right? I'm doing it because it may bring happiness to the other person. That's it, right? Then, if it does bring happiness to the other person and the person reciprocates, wonderful, right? If the other person doesn't, you can say, well, you know, I did it because it was the right thing to do, right? We don't have this extra stuff. So that's the kind of, you know, and we don't have all this anger, jealousy, all the things that come, you know, that we struggle with continuously, right? And, Geshe-la talked about this as the uptight mind or the inflexible mind, right? The mind that kind of is always, you know, like, expect, you know, like he uses the example of when he goes to, oh, yeah. When he goes to Nepal and he gets a pizza, right? And he says, maybe it looks kind of like a pizza, but it doesn't taste like one at all, right? Or French fries, that's the other one, right? And he is really disappointed because, you know, he's traveled all this way, you know, 36 hours of flying and, you know, driving, all this stuff, and he really wants his French fries, right? And it's just like gooey and smushy and all this stuff, right? So, you know, and so that's the kind, you know, we have this expectation, right? And then there comes the eventual disappointment. So, but if, on the other hand, if we are just being compassionate because if we think they're no different from us, really, right? I mean, His Holiness Dalai Lama says, you know, I'm a simple monk, and and I want happiness, the other person wants happiness, I don't want suffering, the other person doesn't want suffering. So it makes us equal. Right? So, if we just behave from that attitude, then we don't have any of these problems, right? And that's why Rinpoche doesn't have problems. Because, you know, he's always in that mode, right? And if you remember of course, you know, those beings go the extra mile. For example, if you remember the story of Atisha, right? I don't know, in the liberation book, there's that story of Atisha, who was this great master from Bengal in India. I'm from Bengal, so I'm really proud of it. So in the 10th century, so he was the second spreading of Buddhism to Tibet. The first one kind of died out, a little bit degenerated, and so he went and spread the second time around, which is the tradition we have now, lineage we have now. So anyway, so Atisha, you know, he had this really miserable, cranky cook, right? As he was traveling over the Himalayas, he had this always cook with him, right? And they asked him, like, why do you have this guy with you? Like, you know, like, he's cranky, he never does what you ask him to do, just throws the plate down in front of you, you know, with the food. I don't even know if the food was any good. I don't remember if that part of the story. Anyway, and he said, well, it gives me an opportunity to practice patience. Because usually everybody's nice to me, right? He's a great master, right? Everybody's bowing to him and they're nice to him. They're always getting him stuff, right? He doesn't really have to work really hard. But this guy, you know, he really is like, he gets an opportunity to practice patience, right? So he kept this guy around just for that reason, right? So like that, right? I mean, it's a funny story, but it's a story that, you know, it's how often do we, you know, we have lots of those people in our lives, right? But we never really practice patience with them. At least I don't. You know, we have expectations built for our children, you know, built in for our children, right? I mean, you know, we expect certain things. We expect them, you know, to take a certain path, and they don't, you know. We expected great things from them, and things don't quite work out, you know. I mean, I'm in that boat to a certain extent. So, you know, So those, you know, those are the kind of things that we put ourselves in, you know. And you know, and I guess you know, I was just thinking the other day that, you know, the first time in my entire work career, so that's like 25 years now, right? I've essentially been, you know, at this, you know, I used to live in California, as you know, right, in Silicon Valley, and I essentially have worked at the same company just about, except for 5 years when I left in the middle. In the same company for, you know, for the last 25 years, just about, right? So 20 years now, and just one company in 5 years is another company. Anyway, so about a few months ago, for the first time in my life, I got made a scapegoat, right? So this project didn't go all that well. You know, there were many, I was partly at fault, but there were other reasons it happened, right? But I just got, I'm a pretty senior engineer, so, you know, I have a lot of responsibility. So, if, you know, if something messes up, it is kind of my fault, right? Because I have to, you know, it's, you know, there are other people working for me. But there were other reasons for us. But anyway, I got totally scapegoated, and, you know, it was interesting, you know, all the things that came up, right? And, you know, I mean, you know, because you start questioning yourself, you know, you think about whether you're, you know, like, am I right, it hurts your self-confidence, I mean, all those things, right? But, you know, it's interesting, you know, I knew I was making progress, right? Because if I were in this situation 5-10 years ago, whatever, you know, I would act very differently, I think. But I could see, you know, I could see that I've made progress because I was able to kind of, even in that moment, right, when the first call came, I was able to think about what was happening, right? You know, bring up that space so that I didn't immediately just react. And I can't say I was transformed adversity into joy and courage. There was no joy or courage in there, right? But there was some amount, at least some amount of equanimity in there, right? And I was able to at least not, you know, blame the other person, not wish him bad things, right? And, you know, in a way, some good things came out of it, you know? So I'm not saying I'm a great practitioner. That's not why I'm bringing this up, right? But I'm just saying that, you know, these things, if you kind of just practice them, if you're thinking about them, you set the motivation, like we talked about Rinpoche, you ask all his students to set the motivation in the morning. Whatever I do today, may it be of benefit, not just of benefit to me, but to benefit to all other beings, right? Every single action that I do today, right? So I had to really think about that motivation every single moment for at least a couple of months. You know, because otherwise it was very hard to not get sucked into myself, right? The attachment to myself. So that's the kind of, you know, we can use these things, right? Use these ideas, right? In our own lives, right? And it can make a difference.
What did you do?
What did I do? Well, I practiced a lot of compassion. You know, I thought a lot about, okay, couple of things. The first thing I did is what we did in our meditation today is when the eye arose, I started examining it. Right? I find that to be the best for me. I mean, now you have to kind of try different things and see what works for you, right? Different things work for different people. For me, whenever I face, you know, whenever someone's attacking me unfairly, let's say, you know, or say insulting me, you know, or et cetera, or is angry at me, I find the thing that works for me the best is whenever the eye arises, just to notice it and just to sit there. I mean, not sit, you know, because you're not sitting most of the time, but just to be there with the eye, right? Not say anything, not react, you know, whatever, right? But just notice the eye, right? And you just say, oh, there it is again, right? Where is it? How is it? Look, how is it that this thing controls me so much, right? So when that, for me at least, again, when I do that, this intense feeling of anger, pride, hurt, you know, all this stuff dissipates, right? I don't act out of that mind that's so consumed, right? So that's the first thing and I did that continuously for a long time, right? Because, you know, I work for a company that's about 10,000-12,000 people now. And when I first joined it, it was only a couple hundred people. You know, now it's 12,000 people. And I basically guts gave good in front of the vice president of the company. So that's a pretty big deal, right? So it took, it was a big deal for me, right? So I really practiced that, number one, to really look at the self. And then the second thing I did was do a lot of that motivation. I do that motivation anyway, you know, may all my actions be of benefit. And I really tried to do that, including at work, especially with that person with whom I had this problem, right? Because I still had to continue to work with that person at least for a while till I put my foot down. I said, no, I'm not working with this person. But that's, you know, another story. But at least for the next 3 or 4 months that I was still working with that person, I continuously just did that. You know, I said, may my actions be of benefit to this person, right? I mean, that's important because we can kind of do these meditations and do these things and, you know, may all beings of enlightenment, may I be the instrument for their enlightenment, they're the originator of my enlightenment. But, you know, if we're just doing that, then it's just, you know, that's easy, right? Or not even easy, that's just academic exercise in a way, right? The time, as Rinpoche says, Rinpoche says, it's the person in front of you. That's the person with whom you should be doing this, right? Not just everybody in general, right? So that's what I did for a long time. And then, then that was mostly it, you know?
How did you stand up for yourself?
Oh, you know, you should use the mic. I'm sorry, because there are people on streaming.
How did you stand up for yourself in a compassionate way?
Well, I'm just thinking of what I did. I'm not so sure that I made a conscious effort to think, gee, how do I stand up for how do I do this, right? I think that if we're thinking if our mindset is kind of pervaded by those, you know, these motivations, and I think that the standing up becomes easier. You know, I don't know how to answer the question. I basically just, you know, I did the what I could do, right, for myself, right, in my mind. And I think partly it's because, you know, when we are practicing in general, right, these things, right, people around us know us for who we are, right? They know we are honorable people, we're trustworthy people, we do what we say, you know, we are kind people, we are loyal people, all these things, right? We don't have to tell them we're Buddhist, that we're doing all these practices, right? That doesn't, but they can see it, right? So when they see that, I think when you do stand up, you have a moral ground from which you rise, right? You're not basically just standing up for yourself because from your selfish perspective, right? You've already set the groundwork. I think that's probably what happened. You know, I think when I called my boss and I said, look, you know, that's not true at all, right? He said, well, I believe you. If he was telling me that, I believe you. That must be what happened, right? Nothing could be changed, right? It's not like I can, so anyway, nothing could be changed, but when I say that, okay, I'm not going to work with this person because, I think our relationship would be really frayed, right? People understood, right? So, I don't know. I don't have a direct answer to your question. But I think that, the only answer I can say is that if we're doing these things, then I think we come from a different place. I don't know. Does that help? Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, that was my metaphoric stab in the back that I was talking about. Or as my wife says, you got thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Right. So maybe I won't read that today. I was thinking about... Yeah, I'll read that next time. So then the next verse, any questions, any other questions about that particular verse? Okay. So the next verse, it says, in short, both directly and indirectly, do I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers? I shall secretly take upon myself all their harmful actions and suffering. So, the all my mothers part is all the mother sentient beings, right? And why are they mother sentient beings? Because, we've had countless lives, right? We have had rebirths from beginningless time, it says. And so, if so, then every other sentient being at some point or other has been our mother. That's the simple logic, right? We don't see them as our mothers because we don't happen to see them as just, because we have myopic vision, right? We only see this life, right? We only think about this life or the self in this life, right? Or we only see people for who they are in this life, right? But every being has been just as kind as our current mother. Every being, right? That's what it says. Every being. And so it's all, when it says happiness and benefit to all my mothers, it's all inclusive. And it's, not just this planet, because now they find life in other planets, right? So now you have to think about, there's a lot of other planets out there too. The universe of mother sentient beings just got a lot bigger. And that's not even the realms that we can't see, right? Wow. This is just the realms physics can observe. Anyway. So that's why it says all my, I offer every happiness and benefit to all my mothers. And, and that's the happiness and benefit. See, that as His Holiness said, right? Other beings are no different from us, right? Because they want the same things as we do, and they don't want the same things we don't want, right? And if you remember, compassion is wanting to remove others' suffering, right? Love is wanting good things for others, right? I want good things for some, I want so-and-so to be happy, right? That's love. I want to remove their suffering. That's compassion. So that's why, so when we do this is the taking and giving, the practice that we did last time, right? Remember with the black smoke, breathing in the black smoke that destroys our self-cherishing in our heart, and then visualizing the white light going to all beings, right? And so we give them all things that we hold dear to us, right? All the roots of our virtue, all our possessions, all things that make us happy, all things that make us who we are today, right? All our possessions, our people, you know, things that make us happy, you know, our relationships, our body, you know, everything, right? So we give them everything, right, that we hold dear. So may they have the same things. If they're lacking an attractive body and we have one, well, I'll give one to that person, right? Or maybe their mental faculties are clouded, you know, whatever you want to call it, right? Maybe they're, you know, handicapped in some way mentally. We can give them our discrimination or our acuity, right? I mean, all those things, we take so many things for granted, right? But so many people don't have, or just sentient beings don't have. So all those things we offer to them. And that's the thing that helps us, you know, we talked a little bit about this, we talked a little bit about this last time. That's the mental exercise that destroys our self-cherishing over time. Right? Is, you know, because it loosens our grasp on all these things, on ourselves. You know, it works in a very funny way. I don't know how it works. You know, I mean, why would this just visualization, this imagining that I'm giving it to all these people, I mean, really, I can't give my body. That's number one. I can't really give my possession because, well, they'll have to come and take it, but they're not really coming and taking it, right? I mean, but it does work, right? It's just, again, it's all, you know, if you accept that it's all in the mind, right? All our happiness, all our suffering is in the mind, then it's all a mental exercise, right? And essentially, we're just exercising the mind in a different way, right? I mean, I don't know who said this, when we, I think it was Chodron Rinpoche, I was in a retreat once, and, anyway, and, so we were doing this meditation, right? Mindfulness meditation. And he said, we were all Westerners. And so he said, you people have all this problem with meditation. But you meditate all the time. You just meditate on the wrong things. Right? I mean, if you think about it, when we're doing mindfulness and breathing meditation, whatever, you know, we put our mind in the breath and, you know, we can barely, you know, like every 5 seconds our mind goes somewhere else and then we have to haul it back after, you know, a couple of minutes after we realize it, you know, all this stuff, right? On the other hand, if somebody is mean to us or threw us under the bus, we can spend hours ruminating on that one thing. Oh, we have no trouble at all. I mean, think about it, right? It's true. Each of us, we know. Again, it's the same mind, right? It's just that we have to apply the mind in a different direction, right? Different way. I mean, that's what he was talking about, right? He said, you people meditate all the time. Just not on the right things. So that's how these kind of taking and giving exercise and these, you know, so when we're facing adversity, like, oh yeah, that's another thing I did. I did this taking and giving exercise. You know, this Tonglen practice, right? A lot. Rinpoche has asked me to do it a lot anyway, but I don't necessarily do it. But this time I did it, and it actually helped. So these practices do work, right? Because, you know, even though, you know, it might seem like it's kind of hokey or baloney, right? Like, how is it going to really work, right? But our minds work in different ways. First of all, it's a mental exercise, right? But the other thing is that there's the mind and then there's a subtle mind, right? It's not just the mind that we can observe, right? I mean, these things don't work just at the, you know, there's a mind, well, they say that there's a mind and there's a subtle mind and there's a very subtle mind. So let's forget the very subtle mind for the moment. Just look at the subtle mind. You know, these things work at a subtle mind level, right? Things that we can't observe. You know, if you take an MRI machine, they're not going to be able to see the subtle mind. So, and that's where, you know, that's how it works. It works at that level, right? So, and then of course there's a very subtle mind, which is, you know, like if you do high yoga tantra practice and so forth and so on, that's the very subtle mind, you know, but that's another story. So, so that's why these things work. And so that's why, you know, they give us these eight verses to so that we can apply these things, right, when these things happen. Because that's when, you know, when things are going well, we don't, you know, we're not going to do these, we don't have much of an impetus, right, to do these things, right? We need to do them when things are going badly, right? But if we're going to do them when things are going badly, we have to practice it when things are going well. So we can't just sit on our haunches or laurels and just when things are going well and just say, okay, yeah, I'm okay, you know. Problem is, if we do that, then when things are going badly, we're not going to know what to do. You know, we're already running down that road, right? You know, of rumination and anger, jealousy, well, all that stuff, right? Before we even recognize any of these things, right? And that's the progress that I, you know, when I said I know I've made some progress, is because I was not down the road, right? I mean, that's how I measure progress for myself, right? I mean, I know where I was before, I know where I am now, and I can see the progress, right? And I can guarantee you, you will see the progress as well. I mean, this isn't rocket science. And, you know, they're relatively simple things. I mean, it doesn't take that much time. We just have to kind of try to do some of these meditations. You know, if we do them every day, that's the most, you know, the one that brings the most benefit. You can allocate 10 minutes. That's all. You know, like the taking and giving meditation, you can do that in 5 minutes. That's all it takes, right? Another 5 to set the motivation before that, right? As Rinpoche said, you know, get out of bed, you think, you know, even before you get out, you open your eyes and you think, oh, how wonderful I have another day, right? Just that is a gift, right? So we don't take it for granted. And then we think, whatever action I take of body, speech, and mind today may be of benefit, not just to me, but also to all beings, right? So every person I come into contact with today, you know, that person at work that I detest, or whoever, right? So it doesn't take that much time, but we have to make that little effort, right? But it accumulates over time. So we talked about destroying the self-cherishing, and we destroyed the cause for all our suffering, right? I mean, that's the thing, right? If you remember, you know, you know, why do we suffer, right? We suffer because we continuously engage in the eight worldly concerns, right? You know, wanting pleasure, not wanting pain, wanting gain, not wanting loss, wanting praise, not wanting blame, and wanting good reputation, and not wanting the opposite. I can never remember what the English word is. So those are the eight worldly concerns, right? So we suffer continuously because we continually engage. We are only think about the world, this life, right? The eight worldly concerns, right? We continually engage in the eight worldly concerns because we have attachment and aversion, right? We continually do attachment and aversion because we are consumed by ignorance, which is self-cherishing, right? So that's the kind of the logic that the Buddha himself went down, right? And that's how we said, okay, the self-cherishing is the root of all our problems. So if we can remove self-cherishing with taking and giving or other meditations or other ways of, you know, approaching these things, we destroy, as Rinpoche said, we destroy the root of our suffering, right? All the roots. We cut it at the root. That's what he says. We cut it at the root. right? Not just for suffering in this life, but suffering forever, right? All lives. So these practices, the 10 minutes a day that we're doing, it's an amazing investment, you know? When you know, hedge funds, they always look at the return on investment, right? ROI, they call it. So this is like an amazing ROI, you know? I mean, you know, it's much better than the stock market. Stock market, you know, I don't, anyway. Yeah. So that's pretty much all I had to say about this verse. Did it make sense? Do you have any questions? Yeah, sure. Somebody with a mic? Yes, thank you.
So, I think I've learned how to practice compassion if someone is not being nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, something that's bothering me from this weekend, I overheard a racial comment said about someone else. And that bothers me, and I don't know how to, you know, apply this practice to situations like that.
Okay, maybe somebody, I don't want to always speak, maybe someone else can talk about how. Somebody have any suggestions on how to approach that? Okay. Oh, yes, thank you.
I would try to pray for the person who had to make that comment for their gaining more knowledge and lessening their ignorance and for the pain that they're suffering that would make a comment like that.
To go along with that, what suffering did that comment come from? And wonder where that person is coming from and trying to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, all of those are you know, that's right. You know, the thing is that, you know, the person who said that, you know, people who usually say derogatory things about other people have great problems with themselves, first of all, right? I mean, they have great, you know, usually that's because they have to put down other people to make themselves feel better, right? I mean, that's the main reason, or maybe there are other reasons, but that's the main reason that I can think of, right? Which must mean that in all their activities in their life, they must have great questions about themselves, right? You know, I mean, they must have suffering about their own self, you know, their self-esteem, self-confidence, or, you know, maybe because, you know, their lack of success maybe in this life. You know, all those things, right, that create these kinds of mentalities, right? So we can think about that, right? I mean, this person is saying it not because out of a vacuum, right? They're saying it because there is great sorrow behind it. And we can look at it like that, right? So we can just do our taking and giving practice for them, for example, to take away their all that suffering that's behind that comment, right? And we can give them, you know, the roots of our virtue, et cetera, and its white light, so that they can succeed in this life, right, and in future lives, right, so that they can, you know, rise above whatever problems they have. I mean, you know, like that, right? I think that if we do that, then at least, see, the thing is that we have two choices, right? One is when something like this happens, like to me, or, you know, like this comment, whatever, we can just ruminate on it, we can feel bad about it, we can, all these things, right? But that doesn't change anything, right? However, we can do something, which is the way we perceive it, And that brings some peace and harmony, right? That is something we can do. We can't change the person. I can't change the person who, you know, who did this to me. You can't change the person who's saying the right, you know, we can't do change anything about it, right? But we can do this about ourselves. And that does bring something, benefit, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I feel like that there's an aspect of fear that the person is coming from that's saying these things that are for some reason they feel threatened by whatever the situation is, whether maybe it's somebody that you know they see as different and they don't agree with the way their lifestyle or whatever, you know, and they're, you know, there's, it's fear-based. I mean, for myself personally, I know, you know, if I'm ever thinking bad thoughts about somebody, it's usually comes from fear, you know, so just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, right? I mean, this whole thing about, you know, building a wall and so forth and so on, right? I mean, it's, you know, the racist comments people make, and I'm not making any political statement here, right? I'm just saying that the fear that people feel about others, right? And the actions that they take based on that, yeah, we can see it. Right? So, yeah,
No, I was talking to a friend the other day, and I had two situations at work last week where these, in meetings, people kind of went at me about some work, and, you know, my sister-in-law, who's a really great lady, she's not a Buddhist, but she's like a Buddhist of my family, so she told me...
It's like my wife, yeah, she's not a Buddhist, but she's...
Right,
yeah,
she's one of these, like, she's just forward-thinking, and I've worked on this last year. When someone says something bad to me, she says, always think communication is about the sender. And it immediately diffuses what me taking it personally or lessens it. And then I don't have to have sympathy for them. You know, you try, but it at least protects my mind from, you know, taking it personally and having the situation escalate. You know, if I say something like, you know, Shanka's this, that's not about you, that's about me, you know, perceiving something, you're bothering me. You're not, but I'm just saying. You don't bother me. You're a nice guy.
Most of the time, yeah.
But yeah, and that diffuses the situation. And then you look at it, it's like, I like what you said about the tense mind. A mind that's tense can't, you know, when I was using drugs, it was all about use, react. And I get a few more seconds to think things through. And like, you look, you know, so just somewhat, that's
right.
The mind is tense, and it's always about the sender. It helps diffuse it for me. I don't know.
So I agree. I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, thinking out of the box, right? I mean, this is like, you know, really like corporate jargon, think out of the box, right? This is totally thinking out of the box, right? I mean, if you do these practices, you're thinking out of the box, all the time. I mean, this is truly applying it, right? Because people expect, you know, like if somebody, you know, does something to us, what is, you know, the intuitive, you know, the obvious thing to do, way to do, react is what most people do, right? But to not do what most people do, that takes real, you know, real effort, right? Real, as Shantideva said in his texts, right, in his Bodhisattva Guide to the Way of Life, he said, Geshe-la would of course quote the verse, I don't remember the verse, but I'm paraphrasing, he said that, you know, people who kill enemies on the battlefield are considered heroes, right? But he said, anybody can do that, right? I mean, just about. Anybody can do that, right? However, to kill the enemies of your mind, right? That's the real hero, right? That is much, much harder, right? Number one, your enemies are temporary, right? They will go away. Either they will die or you will die. Either way, they will be gone, right? But the mind will stay. This mind is going to stay, right? There's no escape from it. If we can conquer this mind, that's the true hero, right? So that's the thinking out of the box. That's real, you know, that we're talking about. I mean, it's easy to go and chase after the guy and cut him down, right? You were going to say something?
This reminds me of what we were talking about last week, about being vigilant and observe, don't judge, and don't just jump to the reaction.
Yeah.
On the vigilant point, that I think I've noticed that becoming more vigilant, noticing when the eye pops up and, you know, not outwardly reacting, and I would internalize that, but I can see after practicing a bit to notice, oh, that feeling just arose and not to act out on it, that it's almost like if someone says something that to make that arise, that really is more about their karma. How you react to it is going to be your karma.
Right. And, that's when you know there's progress right there, right? I mean, that's the first step, right? I mean, if you can notice that it's there and you have that second, maybe you can't stop yourself from punching the guy, right? But there's a second in between where you can look, you think, oh yeah, I'm about to punch the guy. That's actually progress, right? After a while, that second will get longer and longer and your hand will go to your side, right? And you won't actually punch the guy. That's when the next step, right? So I mean, you know, it's pretty cool, you know. Like that's how we you know, that's kind of the stages I went through, you know. I've got a lot more stages to go, unfortunately, but you know, that's another. Yeah, there was someone behind you.
In regards to the person who made the prejudiced remark, that is a suffering human being, and therefore it's my obligation to cherish him, which goes against my ego. And I want to correct him. But who am I to deny his suffering to find the path? So I have to be very careful how I perceive that. I had a great experience. My wife and I have been coming up 20 years of marriage. And I used to, in the beginning, use something called silent scorn and aloofness when she wasn't doing what I wanted her to do. And because of her great love, she came up to me and said, you know, I'm having a good day, and I'm really sorry that you're not.
Hmm.
She was cherishing me rather than feeling bad about my behavior at her. And she says, you know, I decided I'm going to continue to have a good day, and I hope you change your mind. And she walked away from me.
Oh, so repeat the second thing you said?
She said that she decided to continue to have a good day.
I see, yeah.
And then she walked away from me. And the first time in my life, I changed my mind and ran after her and said, I'm going to have a good day with you. That's the beauty of somebody being cherished. If she had challenged my ego, we would have been in a conflict. She would have been defending herself, and I would have been arguing with her. And she didn't do it. I learned from her now how to deal with people that... let's say, start a rumor about me or say something critical of me. If I defend myself, it's my ego against their ego. And we both slip right back into the battle. It is difficult in those situations to cherish the attacker. But I have to remember, they are suffering just like I am. So.
Yeah. Well, that's very profound. Thank you. My wife did something similar to me, but not in that cherishing a way. She had cherishing motivation behind it. Joanna knows my wife, so she knows she's a very direct person. Thank you. She's a very direct person. She's not going to countenance any whatever. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? So the way to put this into practice, right, is, you know, I've harped on this a lot, and I'm going to just say it again, because Rinpoche says this all the time, right, is set the motivation in the morning, right? Even if you're not doing the meditation, and you're not doing the Tonglen practice, et cetera, right? Set the motivation in the morning. You think, you know, how wonderful I have another day. whatever I do may be a benefit to others, and myself and others, right? Because if we set the motivation, even if we don't do anything else, our minds are changing, right? We're creating the seeds for change. And then throughout the day, if we have the presence of mind, right, to think about that motivation, right, am I checking up, right, am I doing what I set out to do? It's okay if we don't, because we are making baby steps, right? So we have to be forgiving with ourselves. But then if we do think about it, if we have the presence of mind and we think about it, we actually will. That reinforces it, right? As you can see, as you can imagine, it makes the change even faster, right? And then the end of the day to basically kind of take stock of the day. How did it go, right? There are certain things that we would have done well. We did constructive things, so really rejoice, about those things. You know, we did some positive things. We helped other people, or we at least didn't harm someone. That's also a positive thing, right? We could have harmed them. We didn't at that moment. So that's a positive thing, right? So rejoice in the positive things we've done, because that helps create the seeds to do it again, right? And then we think through our day and about the not-so-positive things that we've done, right? Maybe negative things, quite negative things, right? And for those, you can do I spoke about the Vajrasattva practice, right? The purification practice. But even if you don't do that, remember the four R's, right? Regret, right, to generate great regret for our action, right? Action of body and speech, which is obvious, but also of mind, right? If we're having jealous thoughts, if we're having, negative thoughts about that person, I hope he dies, whatever, right? So we generate great regret for the action, right? Regret, reliance. So that's like going, if you're on the Buddhist path, if you've taken refuge and so forth and so on, so you rely on the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, regret, reliance, remedy, which is, doing a Vajrasattva practice, doing a Tonglen practice, like what we take, the taking and giving to the person, doing Om Mani Padme Hum chants, doing, any of those, Medicine Buddha, any of those things that we, right? So that's remedy, right? So regret, reliance, remedy, and finally, resolve, right? Resolve not to do it again for a reasonable period of time, right? Not forever, because we're not going to succeed. But for a reasonable period of time, right? If we lie a lot, then we can say, well, I won't lie for half a day, right? If we don't lie very often and we have lied and we're generating resolve not to do it again, okay, I won't lie for a week, right? So like that, right? So basically what's happening is, in the morning with our motivation, we're creating the seeds for positive things, positive actions, positive results, happiness in our future lives, destroying our self-charity, all this stuff, right? So that's that angle. At the end of the day, when we are doing this practice, the 4 R's, Vajrasattva, etc., we are purifying negative causes we have created during that day, right? So that's also now, because, you have to do both things, right? You have to create positive merit and you have to reduce the negative merit we have created in the past, right? And that's how we make spiritual progress quickly, right? So that's why both of those have to go together. I mean, you can do just one, I guess, but, both, doing both is, doing this practice at the end of the day doesn't take that long. I do it and I've timed myself maybe 7 minutes. You know, that's a full Vajrasattva practice, 7 minutes. That's not too bad, you know. So, but, you know, it doesn't even take that long, you know, if you're just, you know, so, yeah. So like that. So those are the two things that Rinpoche always advises his students. And if we do that, then we're always in the, we're not in, we are creating the mindset of not being continuously engaged in the eight worldly concerns. Right? We are thinking about not just this life, right? About other, we're thinking about others and so forth and so on. So if you can remember, you know, I would, if you can do that, you know, while you're taking this module, and of course for the rest of your life, hopefully. And if you can please, you know, do the Tonglen practice, right? Like the practice that we did last week, right, of the taking and giving, or the practice we did today of bodhicitta, you know, generating compassion for all beings, giving them all our roots of virtue and so forth and all those things, right? You can read in the section in the text, you know, the liberation, you know, this book, right? In the required reading section where it talks about, you know, the section to read, right? It basically has essentially the meditation, right? It's a long version, but you know, if you read it, it's actually written in meditation form, essentially. So you can do that, you know. So, but every day, try to do something for just, you know, 10, 15 minutes, or read the, you know, read something out of the text, right? That section. Read something out of the text and contemplate on it, right? So that's advice that Rinpoche gives to everyone is every day, and Geshe Lo gives actually too. You know, he's teaching Elam Rim on Wednesday nights, right? And so he says every day, you know, read and contemplate the Ram, something about the Lam Rim every single day because it keeps it in our minds, right? That's Rinpoche's, advice. That's Geshe Lo's advice, and that's how everybody has, you know, gained their, you know, spiritual attainments. Yeah. So that's it for today. Any last minute questions?
I want to mention one thing I have seen this week. I may not be pronouncing her name correctly, but Pema Chodron has a 1-hour Tonglen practice online. It was advertised at, I think, Shambhala Publications. I had shared a link for it, but I thought it was kind of timely. Sure. We were just doing that last week.
Yeah. And you can also go to Venerable Thupten Chodron. You can go to if you look up Thupten Chodron, thuptenchodron.org, and she's an old student of Lama Yeshe's and Lama Zopa's, and she's not part of the FPMT, but she's like, you know, part of the FPMT. She teaches a lot of FPMT centers. Anyway, so she has a lot of things on her website, audio, especially audio of her teachings, of her meditations. So she has lots of these meditations there as well. Okay, so let's finish with our dedication prayers on page 235. Due to the merits, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha, lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. Thank you. And maybe next week, maybe our last class. I know that we have two classes, but two more left. Three more left? Really? No, there's two. Two. No, I looked up on my calendar because I put it. So maybe next week, maybe our last class, you know, because I'm going faster than I thought I was going to go. So, you know, so we might just do our meditation day next week. No, we'll just meet at 7 o'clock. That's a normal time. That's fine. Okay. Have a good night.